This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. So what caused the global financial crisis of 2008, and who caused it? Depending upon your point of view, you might blame reckless Wall Street financiers who bundled and sold off those toxic mortgage-backed securities and credit default swaps, earning billions for themselves while fanning the flames of economic disaster.
Or you might blame government regulators, including officials from Congress, the Treasury, and the Fed, for too little oversight of the financial industry. Or maybe you blame individual homeowners who took out loans they were incapable of repaying.
Our next guest says none of that gets to the bottom of or really explains why things went so badly. Paul Willen is a research economist at the Boston Federal Reserve who has pored over reams of data from the crisis and has come up with a counterintuitive and controversial conclusion. Willen argues that for the most part, everybody, from the bankers to the lenders to the regulators to the home buyers, all behaved more or less rationally.
But they were all deluded by the mistaken belief that American home prices would continue to rise indefinitely. Nobody saw or believed that there was a bubble that would burst the way it did. Nobody. And Willen says that's what caused the crisis. Take away that blind faith that home prices would only go up, and none of this would have happened.
It's a point of view that might infuriate lots of you out there, not to mention journalists like Michael Lewis or the New York Times' Gretchen Morgenson, who've made strong and compelling cases about how reckless ambition, greed, and corruption fed the economic crisis. But Paul Willen is here to make his case, not as a representative of the Boston Fed, but as someone who's done independent research on this, and we're happy to have him. And welcome to Radio Boston, Paul Willen. Good to have you.
Thank you.
So let's dive right in. Everyone was deluded by this belief that home prices would keep rising. Lay out this case. Why that is the chief cause that you want to focus on, that you say we should focus on?
Well, I think it's easiest to understand our case if you start with the conventional wisdom, the narrative that you hear that has dominated both the popular and even the academic discussion of what caused the crisis, which tells a story of borrowers and investors who were deceived by sophisticated insiders who knew exactly what was going on, and they deceived the borrowers by giving them mortgages that appeared affordable, and they then sold those loans to investors by packaging them in complex securities. They obscured what was really going on, and the investors thought they were buying good loans, but then they turned out they were buying very risky loans, which went bad. Hmm. And I think the main a lot of the research that we've done really has been to address those questions. And what I think you see, and I think the evidence in the data is very compelling, is that the borrowers, it's easiest to see this from the side of the investors largely knew what was going on. They knew they were buying very, very risky mortgages. You can see this in the data. You can see this in the reports they prepared. They understood that these were not, that these were borrowers who had problematic credit history, who had who often hadn't put any money down, and hadn't provided full documentation of income. All that was quite clear to everybody who was investing. So you say, why did someone buy loans like that if they understood how risky they were? And the answer is because if you believe house prices are going up, when you buy a mortgage, it's backed by you have collateral. You have that house, and you know that even if the borrower can't afford to repay the mortgage, and you have perfectly reasonable that the borrower might not be able to repay the mortgage, but you don't really care because you know the borrower will be able to sell the house for more than they paid and pay you back one way or another. And so then you ask the question, so what was really driving all these decisions? What was driving these decisions was this belief that house prices could only go up and that they really couldn't fall.
So if they kept going up and they kept going up, it wouldn't really matter if you were a bad risk, if you couldn't afford the house, because even if you defaulted on the loan, you could sell the house, it would be worth more, and you'd be okay.
Absolutely.
Your investors would be okay. It would just go on and on and on.
And that wasn't just based on – that wasn't just theory. People had, at that point, had been through several years where subprime loans, the so-called Alt-A, which were reduced documentation loans, had performed incredibly well.
But let me just jump in because it sounds like you're suggesting that more, for instance, since the meltdown of 2008, obviously there's been all kinds of calls for more regulation. There's been all kinds of analysis on of the kind of craziness that went on with selling these toxic mortgage-backed securities with credit default swaps on and on, a lot of which inflamed the crisis and made it worse. So are you suggesting that more regulation or a different kind of regulation prior to 2008 couldn't have prevented this crisis from happening?
I think what we say and what I believe is that there are two separate issues here. One is the foreclosure crisis. And I don't know how much we could have done to prevent the foreclosure crisis. But the question of why the foreclosure crisis spread and wrecked the financial, you know, brought the financial industry or the financial sector to its knees, that's a separate question. And I think in that case, I think it is true that financial intermediaries. So one of the ironies about this is the whole point of the insider, this narrative about how it was the insiders who were fooling the outsiders. The whole story, kind of the heart of the story, was that the insiders knew what was going on. But one of the things that we learned, the reason we had a financial crisis was because those insiders, those evil intermediaries, they had hundreds of billions of dollars of this risk on their books. And the reason why Lehman went out of business, and the reason why Bear went out of business, and the reason why Merrill nearly went out of business, the reason why all these big firms were brought to their knees were, it turned out they were investing in all this stuff. And I think one, it is true that regulation going forward could have prevented that.
Yeah.
Having these large financial institutions, I think everybody believed that they were doing what they're accused of, which is passing the risk off onto someone else. But it turned out they weren't passing the risk on. They were taking it themselves.
I guess my big question, though, is if you say sort of the main reason we had this crisis was because everybody was lost in this delusion that prices would just keep on rising, that suggests that the reason is not a lack of regulation or malfeasance by these guys on the inside. And that's what I think a lot of people would have a hard time accepting. And the argument sounds an awful like an effort to get all kinds of people off the hook who should have been responsible for what happened.
But let me give you an example. Right now, sure. We have one of the rules that Dodd-Frank put in was a requirement that lenders hold, and it's not exactly – it's a delicate issue of exactly who they mean by lender, but let's just call them lenders – hold when they sell a loan that they keep 5% of the risk on their books. It turned out that the lenders who were selling these loans, in the end, they had probably 30% or 40% of the risk on their books. Hmm. So these regulations to do – that regulation would have made no difference whatever, if it had been in place in 2004. In fact, I think the point is here is the lenders, people say, well, if only they had to put this stuff on their books. The problem was they were all too eager to put this stuff on their books. They wanted to take on this risk. So that's the kind of regulation that we've come up with, which...
Okay, so that's a problem with current regulations, but I guess I'm trying to understand, you know, I guess I'm trying to push back a little bit about what caused this crisis. Because, for instance, and, you know, I'll admit to you, I've drunk the Kool-Aid, I've read Michael Lewis, I read The Big Short. I mean, when you read a book like that, you get an amazing view of these, a very select group of people on the inside who understood credit default swapped, collateralized debt obligations. They understood that they could hide the risk by complicating it, and that's what happened. They cashed in, and the risk exploded.
When you say they, mean the people who bet against the people who went short in Michael Lewis.
Exactly.
Well, so what's interesting about those people is they were not insiders. I mean, the man who made by far the most money in this was John Paulson. And John Paulson, in fact, had trouble raising money because people thought, what does John Paulson know about housing? He's never done any – he had never been a player at all in the mortgage business. In fact, the people who made money were precisely the people who were not part of the industry. Michael Burry described in Michael Lewis's book, he was not an industry insider. And in fact, in the book, he takes credit for having carefully read the prospectuses. Those are public information. I mean, that's – precisely what they are. So if all it took was reading the prospectuses, then you have to ask the question, why was he reading the prospectuses and other people weren't? And if they were lying, why was it that he was able to figure out all this information just by reading the prospectus? And the simple answer is they weren't. The information was all in the prospectus. It's just that you had to take a bet on which way house prices were going.
Listeners, we're talking to Paul Willen. He's a research economist at the Boston Federal Reserve. He's talking us today about his own research. What do you make of his argument about the cause of the financial crisis? Do you buy it? Does it make sense to you? Does it sound like a cop-out that gets the bankers and the regulators off the hook? You can give us a call, 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. I mean, when we talk about the cause, I mean, I guess I would argue that there were so many causes. I mean, there was the let's talk about the rating agencies, for example. Moody's and Standard & Poor in particular. They were giving the same AAA ratings to dicey mortgage loans that they were given to government-backed bonds. I mean, can't you point to that as a reason for this crisis, and among many others?
I think the rating agency story is much more complicated than people realize. So first of all, it is important to understand, as far as the ratings of the securities that were actually backed by mortgages, and it's important, it seems complicated, I mean, it seems remarkably complicated, but there were securities backed by mortgages, and then there were securities backed by mortgages. And actually, when they analyzed mortgages, Moody's and Standard & Poor's, the rating agencies, actually didn't do a bad job. Those securities have not performed great, but they have performed okay. And given what happened to the housing market, you could say they did a reasonable job rating the securities backed by the home mortgages. And the reason for that is that analyzing home mortgages is something that actually people are fairly good at. People understand default, and I think this was one of the big points we made. People really could forecast that if house prices fell as much as they did, people could forecast that that we would see enormous numbers of foreclosures and losses on these deals. So those securities were fairly well designed. Where things went wrong was in one layer of securities on, which were securities that were backed by securities backed by the mortgages. Now, one important thing to understand is those securities, enormous amount of those securities, those were the ones that killed the financial institutions. Those are the notorious collateralized debt obligations, or CDOs. Those are the ones actually held by the people issuing the securities. So it's complicated, but it's also, you have to understand about what rating agencies are doing. Rating agencies are protecting the investors who bought the securities. Basically understood that these were risky securities. They liked the it was both the investors and the issuers liked the fact that these were that Moody's was giving high ratings to risky securities because they thought they could make money that way.
Paul Willen, let's take a couple of calls. We've already got some folks on the line who want to get into this conversation. Let's go to Peter, who's calling from Framingham. Hi, Peter.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
My quick question is this. Isn't the Economist Online, isn't what he's describing the definition of a bubble? The idea that everybody believes that nothing can ever go down?
Yes.
That's a great question.
Not a question. I mean, yes, that's exactly right. I mean, the characteristics of a bubble, I think that's exactly right, is, you know, a bubble is always a tricky word. It has all kinds of connotations. In some sense, this was a kind of mass delusion. If everybody believes house prices are going up, everybody starts buying houses, house prices go up, and their beliefs are reinforced, and they say, well, see, I was right that house prices were going up. And one of the things I always talk about in this is that there were people – so you have to be careful. We never said that nobody saw a bubble. There were people who worried about it, but there was a debate. There was no kind of scientific certainty that this was a bubble. And in fact, one of my colleagues at the Board of Governors of the Federal Reserve, he said every year he would go to his superiors and he would tell them, I think house prices are going to fall this year. And every year he would be just spectacularly wrong. And he said, after 3 years of doing this, he said to me, you know, if I were in the private sector, I would have been fired by now. And, you know, eventually he turned out to be right. But I think that's what happens in whatever you want to call it, a bubble, mass delusion. But that's exactly what it is.
But is that a case of mass delusion, or the people in power, the regulators who should have known better, the folks in Congress who should have known better, the people backing these loans who should have known better, not listening to the minority of people saying this is a bubble? I mean, Robert Shiller at Yale was one of them. He predicted it, and people didn't listen. So,
I mean, the problem is predicting asset price is a very, very problematic thing. And I think with all due respect to Shiller, who actually was one of my advisors in graduate school, Shiller said in 1996 that stock prices, stocks were a bad investment and were going to essentially return zero in real terms for the next 10 years. Although he, like most economists, he put in a whole bunch of disclaimers, which we all do, because predicting asset prices is risky. And despite the tech bust, despite terrorist attacks, despite two wars, that prediction has come out to be completely wrong. I mean, stock prices have risen 3 or 4% a year in real terms since he made that prediction. So you have to understand that it is very, very difficult, no matter what someone's track record. We're bad. I think one of the things economists really are terrible.
This is one of the
forecasting
arguments you make. You really talk about sort of the limited power, the limited ability of the economy to forecast, of economics.
Of my profession.
Of your profession.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's a couple of sort of big universal questions I want to get to, and that is, I mean, I think what I find so disturbing about what you're saying, I mean, I can't really go toe-to-toe with you on a lot of the facts that you bring up here, but what I find so disturbing is we seem to be blaming the economic collapse on a concept, sort of mass delusion, as opposed to people who should have protected us and did not.
When you say people who should have protected
us, I've gone through
them
a few times. The regulators, the people who were designing these very baroque and complicated financial instruments that essentially obscured the risk that was there.
I mean, it's a philosophical question here. I don't view them as having, I mean, they were. This is a market economy. They were trying to make money. I don't think they had any.
So you don't think there was any deception going on here?
I think,
for example, one more thing. I mean, I talk to people, for example, who should not have been given mortgages. So, yes, you could blame them. On the other hand, these were poorly educated people who were sold a bit of bill of goods by people who knew perfectly well.
I think that's where you're wrong. I think that the people in general, when the people originated these mortgages, they believed, based on, at that point, a fair amount of historical experience at that point, we'll set aside that it was all in a period of rapidly appreciating house prices, those mortgages had turned out well. And so at that point, I mean, we show this in our paper, I mean, the default rates on these loans, and you'd say, what is a person with a 620 FICO score, what are the chances that this person with a poor credit history who has never, didn't put any money down and hasn't, wouldn't document their income, and you say, what are the chances they're going to pay back their mortgage? And the answer is, if they bought their house in 2002, 2003, 2004, the answer is pretty good. I mean, 95% of them, the vast majority of them were paying back their loans. Now, you say—
And yet millions were chucked out of their homes. I mean, I know it doesn't—
But this was—no, I'm saying that was later.
I see.
The point is, I mean, if you look—you know, it's one of these things that in 2005, people were raising questions. We were about these mortgages, and people would say— the delinquency rate on mortgages, and this was true at the time, is at a historic low.
Let me take another call. Cindy is calling from Brookline. Cindy, you're on the air with Paul Willen.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. It's more of a statement than a question, or maybe you can help me understand this. I always feel like when I listen to talk radio, everyone is passing the buck. Now, I was in the real estate industry for 10 years. First, I was a realtor where I sold residential and commercial real estate. Then I went into the banking industry where I was involved in underwriting loans for the secondary market. We packaged for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac through Homeowners Federal. And if you're familiar, you know what happened to Homeowners Federal. But we were told that we had to start taking loans that were not typical because Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were changing their guidelines. And this was in the late 80s and 90s, early 90s. So we as the underwriters saw the writing on the wall. But we didn't have a voice. They were eroding at Glass-Steagall Act, and it wasn't about the legislators protecting us. It was about the people who wanted to make a buck fast in the Wall Street organizations that found another way to create more money to keep a vicious cycle going, even though it wasn't good business sense.
Cindy, you've put a good point on the table. I want to get Paul Willen to respond in the minute or two we have left here.
Okay, so on the question of how do I say this? You have to assume when you're making policy that the people running financial institutions are just trying to make money. That's what they do, and we build a system which is supposed to be to protect people, and that's the job of regulators. But let me just come back to this right now. Most of the people who lost their homes in this crisis did not lose them because they were sold some deceptive, complicated product. So just as an example of this, one of the things you hear over and over again is that the mortgages were incredibly confusing and the borrowers didn't understand the terms of the loans. But in fact, the vast majority of borrowers who lost their homes, the majority of them had fixed-rate mortgages, and even the ones that didn't were making the same payment when they stopped making payments that they had when they got the loan.
But so Paul Nolan, I mean, I know you have the statistics here, or you have some statistics. But I mean, we all of us who were involved in some of the reporting or a lot of the reporting through this, I mean, there were just countless cases of people who did lose their houses because they did not understand.
When you read the reports in the newspaper, what you find is very few of them actually fit that profile.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was the thing. You read the story, and I think most people who lost their homes lost them because the usual combination of falling house prices made it impossible to sell the house, and then something else which made it difficult for them to make the mortgage payment.
Paul, we have literally 30 seconds left. It's such a fascinating subject. I'm sorry we've only been able to scratch the surface. It's a provocative argument, but looking forward, what's the big lesson from your research? Do we have the power to protect ourselves with the help of economists like you from another bubble, from another financial crisis?
I think we do, and I think many of the steps we're doing when you prepare, you have to always prepare for the worst. And I think what happened in 2004 and 2005 and 2006 is we started thinking the worst would never happen.
Paul Willen, research economist at the Federal Reserve Bank in Boston, thanks so much for coming in. We appreciate it. Stay with us. Coming up, building a successful business by making it harder for your customers to buy. We'll have a conversation with Ben Fishman, founder of Rue La La. I'm Anthony Brooks with Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.